Oh, that's right. You know what time it is, 4:07 in the afternoon. Yes, I'm Ann Eller, the home of the award-winning show. Chuck, we should tell you we just won Radio Show of the Year by the South Carolina Broadcasters Association.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm very familiar with that organization because before Best with a Mission,
yes,
I was assistant dean at the College of Journalism and Mass Communications at the University of South Carolina.
Absolutely. I thought that's where I was asking you a little earlier about that. But we're going to be talking about Vets with a Mission. Believe it or not, folks, this is an organization that goes back to Vietnam to help. And a fascinating story here. Our very special guest today is Charles Chuck Ward. He's a Navy veteran of the Vietnam War. He served 1968 to 1972. Chuck, welcome to the show today.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Absolutely. Now, you are now the executive director of Vets with a Mission. And what can you tell us? First, we're going to talk a little bit about what Vets with a Mission is, and then I want to go back and talk about some of the things you you have accomplished in your personal life. So what is Vets with a Mission?
Vets with a Mission is a nonprofit. It's a charitable organization. It's a 501c3. It is also a recognized NGO or non-governmental organization with a certificate of registration recognized by the Vietnamese government to have an office in Da Nang and offer various programs and projects in the country, and that's who we are.
Now, just out of curiosity, this Vets with a Mission, what exactly, how did this organization form?
Back in about 1985-86, a gentleman by the name of William Kimball, Bill Kimball, a Vietnam vet, an Army vet, felt that the job wasn't completed, that there was some unfinished business. Bill was a Christian. He believed very strongly in what the Bible says about helping the poor and so on. And being a vet, he still wanted to help the South Vietnamese people, although they're no longer South Vietnamese. It's all one Vietnam now. So he was able to get permission from our State Department and the Vietnamese to go back and do a exploratory trip to the country back in 1988. And that visit, along with four or five other Vietnam vets, friends of his, led to the creation, the founding of Vets with a Mission in 1989 and their first trip back to Vietnam.
You know, a lot of people would say, why go back to Vietnam? I know a lot of vets that went there, they said they would never want to go back there. What do you have to say about that?
I would say that I understand completely. On March 30th, 1972, I got in an airplane, a World Airways jet charter at Da Nang Airport. And when that plane lifted off that runway, I said, I will never come back to this place.
What did they say about saying never?
That's right. Never say never.
Right.
This is particularly true if you're a Christian. Never say never to God, because you never know what he has in store for you or what his plans are. So I left, no intention to ever come back.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually went back to Vietnam as a volunteer with Vets with a Mission in 1992. About 4 years after that, I was invited to serve on the board of Vets with a Mission. And then, that was 96, and then in about 2000, early in 2000, Bill Kimball, the founder, was going to resign for personal and health reasons, and the board, unbeknownst to me, had discussed amongst themselves, you know, we wonder if Chuck would want to do this. And that's how it came about for me. They invited me, and so in January of 2001, I announced my resignation there at the College of Journalism and Mass Communications at USC. And that summer in July, I went full-time with Vets with a Mission, and the rest is history.
Wow. Now, where are you from originally?
Originally, East St. Louis, Illinois, born and raised in Southern Illinois, across from St. Louis. Big Cardinal fan, obviously.
Yeah.
And there are some great Cardinal fans in this area and in Newberry, you know, where I live. But went to school in that area, went to college in Kansas. This is how I got to Vietnam. I spent a lot of time at college in Kansas.
In Kansas?
In 1966.
There's no place like home. There's no place like
that's
home.
Right.
Yeah, that's
but,
right, Dorothy.
I forgot that you're supposed to study when you go to college, and I lost my 2S deferment and was invited, was reclassified 1A, was invited to take a physical, passed it.
Invited. I like that word. You were invited.
I got that
invitation. Was it called the draft, was it?
No. Right. That little letter from Selective Service.
And, yeah.
My father, being a World War II vet and infantry man and just beat into my head, don't go in the infantry, don't go in the infantry. I always had a fascination with flying, so I didn't want to go in the Air Force. The Army and Marines were ready to take you tomorrow. I really liked the idea of the Navy and aircraft carriers, and you know, I got on a wait list for that, and I don't know, maybe 3.5-4 weeks later, one night at 10 o'clock, the recruiter called and said,
your number's up.
You're next on the list because three people in front of you don't want to go.
Wow.
So I said, when do I leave? He said, in the morning at 5 o'clock. So that's
how
I started.
Were you a little shocked?
That soon I was. I was thinking, well, maybe a month or so down the road or whatever, but it was time to go, so I went, and I originally signed up being air traffic controlman. Didn't work out. I spent a week in the hospital and during basic training, got out. The hospital thought I'd go back to my company. They made me start all over after 8 weeks. So I did 8 weeks of boot camp, and then I did 12 weeks of boot camp, you know,
how
I got there.
Yeah, well, how was the experience, though? I mean, when you look back on it, what do you say?
It turned out great, really, that experience for me. I was enlisted, not an officer. I was an air crew. I spent all my time around pilots and air crews on an aircraft carrier. When I wasn't on the aircraft carrier, I was in California at the air base. My third deployment was in Da Nang at the air base there. I just know that I can tell you this. I definitely had it better than the soldiers and the Marines that were running around that jungle every day.
Absolutely. No question about it. Hey, I am here with Chuck Ward. He is Vets with a Mission. He's the executive director, and we're going to be talking about this. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. Don't you go away.
Gold. Gold. More precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery. Yes, I'm Ann Eller. Yes, we have a very interesting guest with us here today, Chuck Ward, who is, as I said, a Navy veteran and is Executive Director of Vets with a Mission. You know, you took this over then in what year, were you telling me?
2001, full-time.
Full-time. How has this experience been as far as to be in this position, and what have you seen growth in it since you have taken over?
Well, the growth that I've enjoyed the most has been seeing Vietnam move forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we fought for certain things in Vietnam. You wanted the people to be free and have the right to determine their own nationality and so on, and didn't work out the way that our country wanted it to work and their allies, but it is what it is. It's history. And the country today, The bright thing about Vietnam, and I do think it has a bright future, is because the young people enjoy and embrace and want to have the same kind of freedoms and liberties that we have. Now, that doesn't line up with the communist socialist system. But what are they going to do? There's 90 million plus people in that country. Most of the population, over 70%, born after 1975. So they're really a young country.
Sure.
And while the people, the government officials, the political leaders from the north, many came south after the war, took over the jobs and all the important positions and so on, the young people today, they want to come to the United States and get an education, and they want to go back to their country and make it a better place for them and for their fellow citizens. And that's what's so exciting about Vietnam today. The things that we fought for, the right of determination to make your own personal choices, freedoms, is beginning to happen in Vietnam. And for the vets out there that only remember Vietnam as 1966 or 68 or whatever, it's not that place anymore. There are five-star resorts up and down the coastline, golf courses everywhere, five-star hotels.
You said someone would be hard-pressed to find the place that they were stationed at unless they were out in the real boonies.
Yes. Unfortunately, we're not getting any younger, and the year goes on. The years go on. And, of course, next year, well, actually it's 2015, is the 50th commemoration year of our country's involvement in the war, 1965. So I'm a young Vietnam vet at 65. Most are in their 70s.
Mm-hmm.
But to go back there today, I think most vets would be absolutely astonished at the respect and the way that they're going to be treated. It isn't anything like what they thought it would be when they were thinking about Vietnam in the past.
You know, I think for a lot of Vietnam vets, it's just a chapter in their lives they just wanted to forget about. And, you know, particularly when we look at how they came home, there wasn't that respect for what had happened. So, you know, one of the things that I have noticed is what a change we have today for our military coming home from serving in the Middle East or whatever. And what do you think can be done for our veterans that went to Vietnam and came back and it wasn't a good story?
Well, it is a great thing today that I believe because of how many Vietnam vets were treated, our country and the people decided that whether you were for the war or against the war in Iraq or Afghanistan, they weren't going to treat the Iraqi and the Afghanistan vets the same way they treated Vietnam vets. And that is a great thing. I've had many Iraqi or Afghanistan vets come up to me and thank me for my service when they find out I'm a Vietnam vet, and also say thank you for what you did because of what you did, we're treated differently. So that's a good thing. I would say to Vietnam vets that, you know, no one goes to war where you don't have a bad experience at some point.
That's why it's called war,
right?
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right. Now, the soldier, the Marine, the sailor, whether off the coast or in the country, the airman who was on a base or flying over the country, everyone's experience is unique to their service, so everything is different. But most Vietnam vets went to Vietnam, served, came home, got on with their life,
mm-hmm.
married, had a family, perhaps went to college, had a career. That's the majority of Vietnam vets. Did the war scar them in some certain ways, emotionally or perhaps physically if they were wounded? Absolutely. But like the World War II vet, you move on. There are some people, including the Vietnam War, they've had difficulty moving on.
Mm-hmm.
Vietnam was the seminal moment in their life. Maybe nothing since has been as important as the time they served in Vietnam. I can tell you the bond that you develop between those that you serve with,
sure,
very special, and you just can't duplicate that in civilian life. But, you know, it reminds me of the story a farmer told once about wrestling with a pig in the pig pen.
Okay.
Now, the farmer...
familiar with this story,
okay,
I don't
well,
think.
What happens is that the farmer went in there and wrestled with that pig, and the pig came out smiling, had a great time. Farmer came out smelling like you know what.
Right.
Well, let's make the analogy to Vietnam. You can let Vietnam ruin your life. Something, you know, terrible happened. We've all been there, done that. And you can let that run your life and ruin your life for 40 or 50 years. Or you can decide
mm-hmm.
it's not going to do that. I think there's some Vietnam vets who just can't get over that hump. But we have had those who have had that issue. And they've gone back to Vietnam with us. And when they went home, some of them never had another flashback or another nightmare. They were absolutely incredulous about their experience with the respect and the way the Vietnamese treated them. And they saw Vietnam today,
mm-hmm.
not Vietnam from 1968.
Well, that's a very good thing.
Yes, that's a very good thing.
Absolutely. So what type of missions do y'all go on? What type of things? I was reading in here, didn't y'all just raise money for a Winnebago that is going to be there and some of the other things that are happening that are really big with this Vets with a Mission?
We've been fortunate in that the Vietnam vets that served and those who have friends are very interested in what we're doing. So over the years, we first began taking Vietnam vet construction teams.
Mm-hmm.
To go back and start building a medical clinic in a rural area or in a poor section of the city. That's how Vets with Mission began doing those things. And that led to over 30 medical clinics. And then that led to other medical facilities. Then we started taking medical teams back to do healthcare screenings and help the poor.
Mm-hmm.
That led to our children's heart surgery program, nearly 60 children now between the ages of maybe 2.5, 3 years old, up to the late 20s,
mm-hmm.
have received life-saving heart operations, compliments of Vets with a Mission, the people who support us. And it's all about just doing the right thing. We're obviously a Christian organization, and even though the communists are not Christians, mm-hmm. and they don't believe in religion, and quite frankly, they're still a little spooked about the Buddhist movement during the during the war, and a little spooked about the Roman Catholics during the war, and they don't know quite what to think of Christians and so on. We go there and just share what we've learned in the Bible, what we know what the Bible says, through our example. We don't beat anyone over the head with a Bible, and quite frankly, it's against the law for a foreigner to proselytize,
to beat somebody
evangelize,
over
or witness, plus hit them over the head with a Bible and get you in trouble.
Exactly.
But we do what we do because we know that's the right thing to do. And it's a great way for a Vietnam vet to go back and see the country in a different light, be treated different by the people. And it's almost an embarrassment to say that the first person outside of my family that ever thanked me for my service in Vietnam was a former Viet Cong colonel, an officer, who fought in the Da Nang area in 1992, welcomed me back and thanked me for my service. Is that ironic or
what? That is pretty ironic. Absolutely. Well, these are some of the things, you know. I guess that's why on your badge there it says reconciliation, right?
Yes, it does. And for the vets that are possibly listening out there, one of the things that we do, I'll often have a reconciliation dinner. We have that during the course of our time that we're there. We have a celebratory dinner at the end of our team trip to Vietnam where we honor our Vietnam vets, but often we have a reconciliation dinner. Now imagine, all of my guys are on one side of the table, and on the other side are former Viet Cong and North Vietnamese Army officers.
So these are Viet Cong, then?
Yes.
These are North, yes. This is the enemy.
This is the enemy. And what you find
out... And do you
out,
feel safe in that meeting?
Absolutely. I feel safer in Vietnam and some cities and places in this country. But what you find out is that the guy on the other side of the table, mm-hmm. just doing his job like you were.
Right.
And they have grandkids. They have families. They did what they had to do because that's what we were supposed to do.
Sure.
And the respect and the camaraderie. And every once in a while, we'll find a VC or an NVA mm-hmm. sitting across from an American, and they served at the same time in the same area. And that's very
special. That's pretty freaky. That's pretty freaky,
yes. It's freaky, but, you know, you bury the hatchet, and there's been some great friendships developed between former enemies after these
reconciliations. Do they speak English, or how do you communicate?
Most of the Vietnamese speak English. The young people all speak English. It's the number two language in the country. But for everything that we do, like our medical teams and so on, we have interpreters that come with us, and it's not an easy language to learn. It's very difficult.
Well, it's French. It's French inspired, isn't it? Does it have derivatives
actually,
of French?
It was French Jesuits that brought the phonetic alphabet to Vietnam
right.
during their mission work. Otherwise, Vietnam would have a language that would look like the script of Cambodia or Laos. But the second language in Vietnam used to be French.
Right. That's what I thought.
And so a lot of the older Vietnamese still speak French. But all the middle-aged and younger Vietnamese speak English as well as Vietnamese, and it's not unusual for a shop owner, someone who sells, you know, a jewelry business,
mm-hmm.
you know, like here. They'll speak English, and they'll speak French,
wow.
and they've never gone to college. Perhaps didn't graduate from high school, but they'll also speak German, maybe a little Japanese and Chinese. Because that's what they had to do
to get
to
by.
Be able to get by in commerce.
Sure. It is amazing what we have to do to get by in commerce, whether it's language. And, you know, there is one thing that I have always learned. Whatever language I'm dealing with, all I need is my trusty calculator and be able to punch the amount in. And you know what? We can make a deal.
And they love making deals. Shopping is a big thing there.
Exactly.
I tell the Vietnam vets out there that are retired and they have their wife, it is a great time to go back. The infrastructure has never been better. The airlines are newer than our airlines. The hotels are five-star. When we go to Ho Chi Minh City, the former Saigon,
mm-hmm.
we stay at a Marriott Renaissance Hotel around the corner from the Hilton, around the corner from the Sheraton and the Hyatt.
There you go.
It is a different place.
Well, there you go. Hey, listen, we are talking with Chuck Ward, and if you'd like more information, you can go to their website, veteranswithamission.org. That's vetswithamission.org. Make sure you check that out, but please stay with us. When we come back, we've got a lot more to talk about, and if you've got a question, don't hesitate to pick up that phone, 229-7984. That's 229-7984.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. We are right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery, having a fascinating conversation this afternoon on Vets with a Mission. We are talking with Chuck Ward, who is the executive director. And believe it or not, he lives in Newberry, South Carolina, not very far away. I have to say that, Chuck, I am amazed that I didn't know about this organization, because we do spend a lot of time working with vets and trying to make sure that everybody knows about all the different organizations. Why, now, you're not, you don't take any government money, or you're, how are you formed and put together here? And I understand you have a 501c. Is that amazing? I guess, well, it says reconciliation. It doesn't say anything about voting in it. Okay, I understand. Go ahead.
Well, we are, since we are a charity, mm-hmm. we're 100% gift supported. And we made a choice not to accept any state or federal funds, because there's always strings attached.
Yep.
And we wanted to be able to do whatever we felt led to do. We didn't want any restrictions. So most of our funding comes from Vietnam vets, from individuals, followed by churches, and then some companies. Foundations in the past have supported us. But, you know, right now it's a very difficult time to get foundation grants because of the way the economy has gone
sure.
in the last few years. So that's how we're funded. People go on trips with us. We have three or four trips a year. Often those people that participate on those trips end up being a supporter, either once a year or once a quarter or monthly. I mean, who knows, whatever they feel like they want to do. But one thing that has happened in 1991 to 92, the teams were comprised of about 75-80% vets to 15-20% non-vets.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're not getting any younger, and it's the other way around now. The teams are 20-25% Vietnam veterans, with 75-80% being non-veteran civilians. It's just the way that it happens. And now we're seeing the children of vets go back with us, and it's a trip, I think, for everyone, but I think some vets think it's not for them. We've had vets take their wife, vets take their kids. And now we have vets taking their grandkids. It is a great way to go back, and a very positive, wonderful experience. The Vietnamese are a warm culture. The people are very friendly. They do love Americans, and they like the United States. So if anyone thinks there's some animosity out there, we run across it occasionally, once in a great while. I'm talking about the people.
Mm-hmm.
The government officials at times can be very obstinate, but they also know that what we're doing, we've been there now, going on 25 years, starting next year, so they know us pretty well. We know them pretty well. Things usually work out good.
Now, you were telling me, you know, because we were talking about the fact of how this growth and everything has happened in Vietnam, because normally you think of not that type of free reign of capitalism or whatever. Why don't you go ahead and tell us about what you were talking about before we came back on the air?
When the country fell, the influence was from Communist China and from the Soviet Union. They embraced the Soviet Union's central economic planning model, and for 10 years they tried to follow that. Well, by 1985-86, the country is going broke. People are starving, can't produce enough rice to feed themselves, no parts for equipment, trucks. I can remember my first few trips back there, bicycles.
Bicycles.
A few motorbikes, the only vehicles you saw were a government or army.
Mm-hmm.
Airplanes were the old Soviet aircraft, scared me to death. The first time I flew from Ho Chi Minh City, the former Saigon, to Da Nang, I thought, I survived three tours here in the war flying around this place. I won't get killed in this Russian aircraft flying up to Da Nang. But they came to the point where they had to do something, and they knew that what they were doing wasn't working. The Vietnamese are very bright, very industrious. They embrace education. Don't underestimate them. They knew they had to do something different. And someone in authority decided, we're going to give free enterprise capitalism a shot, and we're going to do it in the former Saigon, Ho Chi Minh City. And that opened up the door to Vietnam in the late 80s and early 1990s. By 1994, President Clinton lifted the tourist embargo. And that was like Katie barred the door. The tourists started coming, and the businesses started checking out Vietnam. And then by 1996, the president lifted the economic embargo. By 1998, the country has exploded in economic growth. So today, when you go to Vietnam, you can go out in the countryside, and you can still find places like where we're going this March and April, a place called A Lui in Thua Thinh Way province, which is only 10 kilometers from Laos. It's the old Vietnam, we call it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll stay in one or two-star guest houses. I love it because my team gets to experience the real Vietnam. But other than that, when we stay in Da Nang or Saigon or Hue, you're talking five-star hotels. You're talking Marriotts and Hyatts, and it's just amazing. You know, the whole one side of the country is nothing but bordered by ocean,
right,
with beaches. And now that's dotted with golf courses and five-star resorts. And it is an amazing thing. The tourism really just helped the country take off, and there's a economic boom there. For those of our vets that are listening that haven't been back to the Saigon area, and I never went to the Saigon area during the war, just Da Nang, there's now a 40-story skyscraper in Saigon. There's tunnels under the Saigon River. There's escalators in the shopping centers. I mean, there's Kentucky Fried Chicken. McDonald's just announced that they're going into Vietnam, and I had my first Starbucks coffee in Vietnam this past February.
Who knew that things could change that much?
That is so true, and I think that's somewhat of what I like to share with the veterans. What you fought for in terms of freedom and enterprise and individuals having the right to make choices in their life, it's beginning to happen, and it is a fascinating place.
Now, what about the North Vietnamese, though, and everything? Will they allow this to continue?
I don't think there's any question that they're going to allow it to continue. There's a resort in Da Nang, the central city on the coast, called the Phu Rama Resort. It's a five-star hotel. It was the first five-star resort built. Many people from Hanoi that mm-hmm. work for the government and come down there for vacations and holidays. Well, they have also built some villas there. 20 of them face the ocean and 20 others in the compound. The 20 facing the ocean are all sold. They're either a $2 million unit villa or a $1 million villa. And all 20 have been sold over the last 4 years. And they've all been bought by Vietnamese from either Saigon, Ho Chi Minh City, or Hanoi. So I think they like free enterprise capitalism.
Okay. Because, you know, it makes you wonder why some other areas of the world have not embraced this, doesn't it?
Well, from my experience traveling in Vietnam and being in Cambodia and Laos and Thailand, there are some people who just like to make money for themselves and control things, and when that happens, it's not a good thing. So when people have equal opportunities, good things happen. And, you know, 15 years ago, if we wanted to help a child that was going to die that needed a heart operation, that child had to be taken to Hong Kong or Australia, New Zealand, Malaysia, Indonesia. Mm-hmm. It wasn't going to happen in Vietnam. Now we have all our heart operations done in Vietnam and Hue, at Hue Medical and University School and Hospital. And one of our team members, a year ago this past February, had a heart attack in the hotel lobby.
Are they still here?
They got two stents put in Hue, and he's going back in March, April next year with us.
Wow. All right. Well, we are here with Chuck Ward. He is the Executive Director of Vets with a Mission. So why don't you stay right with us? Again, if you have a question, don't hesitate to give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984.
Gold dust at my feet on the sunny side of...
This year will be a simpler year. One fine gift to last a lifetime from Mother Earth with love. A diamond to light the way and create the energy to keep your love alive. Only at Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood, 229-6276.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here. We're talking about Vets with a Mission. Chuck Ward, a Navy veteran, is now the executive director of this organization. And Chuck, what would you like? What would you like to see? What's a vision for Vets with a Mission? To no longer be there anymore?
You know, there are some charities, not many, but there are some that's kind of self-perpetuating. You know, they did this, and then they became this, and then when that was done, they went over and became that.
Right.
Well, Vets with a Mission, we're in our 25th year starting 2014, and we see the light at the end of the tunnel, and it's not an onrushing train. It's the end of our time, our purpose in Vietnam. We're just not going to keep raising money to, you know, to pay me or do whatever. We had a plan and a purpose, and we're getting older, and now we're in what we call a transition time. Over the next few years or so, we will be transitioning to Vietnamese Americans becoming more involved with Vets with a Mission, and also Vietnamese becoming more involved. And the charity work that we do in terms of the medical teams, we'll be transitioning that to a Vietnamese charity in Vietnam. And then we'll also, we do a lot of work with the church and Christians in Vietnam, and we'll transition that to a church in Vietnam. And the day will come when Vets with a Mission really will cease to function as it is right now. Now, we're not there yet. We have a few years to go. But that day is coming. And so being able to turn this over to the Vietnamese Christians and the Vietnamese charities, that's a place where we want to go, and we think it's the right place to go. And we're looking forward to that day, even though we'll be a little sad for some of us.
Sure, exactly. Now, as far as trips coming up, you've mentioned you have another trip next year.
We have a surgical team going over in February, but that trip is closed out, sold out, so on. Our next trip to go back to Vietnam is this coming March and April. If someone goes to our website, they can click on upcoming trips and see that, but It's a pretty good trip in terms of going back for your first time, because you're going to go to Da Nang, which is a big central coastal city. And by the way, for the Vietnam vets out there, if you really want to know how much the place has changed, go on there and Google Dragon Bridge, Da Nang, Vietnam.
Okay.
Or go on YouTube and put in there in your search, Dragon Bridge. There's a new bridge over the Han River there on Da Nang, and on every Saturday night at 10 o'clock, the Dragon Bridge shoots fire out of its mouth. So it's not exactly your same Vietnam War that you remember. So,
are you saying the bridge wasn't that exciting then?
It was not exciting. Now, the American bridge is still there and still handles vehicular traffic. The French bridge is down to bicycles. So, you know, we always like to mention that. But going back to Vietnam this coming March or April, you're going to be in the city. You're going to be at a five-star hotel. You're also going to go up to Hue, which is the ancient capital of Vietnam. You're going to go out to the boonies, as people like to say, out to the countryside. You're going to be helping Kin, which is Vietnamese nationals. You're going to be helping ethnic minorities, Montagnards, and certain tribes out near the Laotian border. In our clinics, there's a role for everyone to play. You don't have to be a medical or health professional. There's things that we have to do in our teams in terms of patient services and security and working in the pharmacy, and someone's going to have to put the wheelchairs together, and we're going to have to help the elderly mama-san up the stairs to get to see the doctor. There's something for everyone to do. And the highlight of our team trip is the end, where we have a celebratory dinner in honor of the Vietnam vets. And it is a very special evening.
Wow. Now, how many people do you take over in a trip?
Teams can be as small as 15 or 20, can be as large as 25, 30, usually not any larger than 35, because I've learned that having 35 adults is like trying to herd cats. So 35 is about it.
Okay.
Okay, but if you, some vets go back the first time, they just want to go by themselves. But I do encourage them, if they have a spouse, you should bring her, because it is a great place to get your pedicure, manicure for about $4. So the
wife
will like
that. That's what I understand.
That.
The prices are very inexpensive when even compared against American prices. Normally, we think of going overseas and whatnot. It's more expensive, but very inexpensive.
Well, you know, these trips are around $3,600 from, say, Atlanta. To go halfway around the world and stay in 4- and 5-star hotels.
For how long?
Have breakfast all day. I mean, breakfast every day. It's really not It's not out of...
How long are the trips for?
Usually they're a minimum 2 weeks and sometimes 2.5 weeks. You know, it takes a little while to get there.
Yes.
You know, from Atlanta to Seoul, as an example, you're looking at, you know, about 13 and a half, 14 hours of flying, 2-3 hour layover, and then another 4.5-5 hours into Vietnam. So it's a long way. It's on the other side of the planet. And when you come back, you have the same day twice, but the jet lag is just something else.
It's
so
a killer. It is a killer.
You've
yes.
been there. You
yeah,
understand.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know any tricks on how to get over jet lag?
No, I sure don't. I would like to know some, yes.
But it is a great way to go back.
That's excellent. Now, what if somebody is listening and they'd like to call and talk to you? Can they give them a telephone number?
Sure. In Newberry, the area code's 803.
Mm-hmm.
Call 405-9926. That's our office number.
Mm-hmm.
Usually there every day, 8 to 5, sometimes a little earlier, sometimes a little longer. If I'm not there, there's one other person that works there part-time, and we'll be happy to take your call. If not, we've got a machine. Leave it. The easiest and best way to get in touch with me is by email.
Okay.
And that's the name of our organization, Vets with a Mission, mm-hmm. at backroads.net. And I will return your call, or I will return
send
your email.
Yeah. Now, the website there has a lot of information on your website and has pictures and information if you want to take the trip or things that are going on. So you plan to, do you always go on all the trips?
Yes, I'm on every trip. My wife is usually on every trip. I've stopped counting at 60. I don't count how many times I've gone back to Vietnam now. My wife, Joette, she's probably been back 30 times at least. But there's something I want to tell the vets about. We had a vet. He was a Marine. Well, once a Marine, always a Marine.
Right.
Just not as lean and mean, but still a Marine. But he had two... girls, 10 and 11, that used to bring him potato chips and snacks and help clean up his place where he lived and get him a Coke when he wanted something. And he wondered, and this was 1968, 69.
So this is when he was originally in Vietnam.
Yes, he was originally in Vietnam.
Okay.
So he goes back to Vietnam. He asked me, do you think we can find them? I said, well, you know, if they survived the war, I believe we could. From my experience, people stay within 4, 5, 6 kilometers of where they grew up.
Mm-hmm.
So we put him in a van one weekend when we were off, and we have weekends off so people can do things. And one of our interpreters and a tour guide who's very familiar with all the war situation there in Central Vietnam, and we sent him out there, and within an hour, he found one of those gals.
Oh, my goodness.
And within an hour and a half, the second one came forward. So if you go to our website, you'll see a fellow holding up a Vets with a Mission t-shirt, and there's these two older women next to him. Those were the same two gals, 1968-69.
And he's sure?
Did his laundry.
Are you sure?
Absolutely.
Okay, no
Absolutely.
Question about it.
No question
you know,
about
okay.
it.
We could just have two gals show up here.
His name is Earl Gorman.
Yeah.
Google him. You can contact him yourself. He's also written a book about Vietnam and his trip back with to Vietnam with Vets with the Mission called Fire Mission. And, you know, CBS 60 Minutes has had a little spiel about us. We've been mentioned in numerous books, Oliver North's One More Mission and many other books. Dan Rather's book, Flashbacks,
mm-hmm.
has a section on Vets with a Mission. Even Stolen Valor, the controversial book about people who say they're Vietnam vets, but they're not.
Not right.
There was a guy in there who went on a trip with us.
And he wasn't a Vietnam vet?
He wasn't a Vietnam vet. He had a great story, and he knew all the things to say. Turns out he was a fake, and that's why now... Chuck Ward at Vets with a Mission requires every vet that wants to go on a trip to give me a copy of their DD-214.
Right.
So we know they really are who they say they are.
Wow.
But it's a great way to go back. And you know, don't shut it out if you had a bad experience. I mean, who doesn't have a bad experience?
Sure.
But I also had some great times there and developed some wonderful friendships and so on. So, you know, think about it if you ever thought about going back. Think about it again, because now is a great time to go back, and we're not getting any younger.
That is true. In fact, I think there's actually some talk of doing some honor flights for our Vietnam veterans coming
that
up after the Korean vets here that, mm-hmm. of course, are now going on mission trips. Not mission trips, but going up mm-hmm. to Washington, D.C. and doing the tour and everything. Yeah, that's a It is sad that we had to go through that. It is good to know that it has changed. Having just had going through the 60th anniversary of the Korean War, and every time you go to the Korean War Monument in Washington, D.C., there are wreaths from the Koreans thanking the Americans.
Yes.
It's good to know that that same type of thing, even though we don't have that monument there, but that we are appreciated for what we did over there, because I think a lot of people left there thinking they weren't appreciated, and why had they spent the time there and lost loved ones and this type of thing.
I understand. I had a Vietnamese official in an office that gives us permission to work there. We were talking one day, and he said, off the record, he said, you know, I don't quite understand why you come back, because we had people, famous people. He mentioned Ramsey Clark, I believe, was a former attorney general. Of course, he mentioned Jane Fonda. People who said they loved Vietnam. Joan Baez, I remember he mentioned her name. They love Vietnam. They come back and help us. But the war's over, and we haven't seen them since. But you and your men and women that served in Vietnam, we fought against one another. You come back. He said, how can you do that? And so my explanation to him was, well, we're Christians, and that's what the Bible says you're supposed to do. And I will tell anyone who's listening out there who is a Christian, and if you're struggling with Vietnam today, I can tell you that with Jesus, the past is the past at last.
Well, I am so glad you came here today. You are listening to WCRS right here in Greenwood. Chuck, I think it's phenomenal what you've been able to share with us today, and I certainly hope that if there are any veterans out there who would like to be part or at least investigate the possibility of this, that you will give Chuck a call, 803-405-9926, or check out the website, vetswithamission.org. That's vetswithamission.org. He's down there in Newberry. He'd probably like to come back and talk to some of the groups up here, too, if you haven't talked to him. So give him a call. Interesting guy, and so glad you were able to come out here today, Chuck. Thanks so much.
Thank you for the invitation, Ann. I enjoyed it.
Well, this was great. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.